Hi, and welcome to another episode of The Leadership Enigma. Please check out the YouTube channel. We had over 500,000 views last month. But subscribe, click the notification bell because we have more content each and every week. Now, this episode is powered by Heidrick & Struggles, a premier provider of global leadership advisory and on-demand talent solutions. And why? Because my guest is a partner of Heidrick & Struggles. And indeed, yes, I'm also part of Heidrick & Struggles. Now, there's always great research that comes out of Heidrick & Struggles, which allows us to have a point of view and to help our clients on a global basis. And this one is going to be really focused on CEO and board confidence, because perhaps there's a worrying start to 2024. This is a year of continued great change. This is a year of the most global elections we've ever seen, and a world that, I've said this many times, has gone mildly bonkers. And I need someone far wiser than myself. Come back to me after the break, where I've got the wonderful Alice Breeden, who actually looks after our CEO and board practice. And she will help us understand what this research is all about. Come back to me just after this break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Alice, it's a huge warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to see you.
It is lovely to see you. Now, I did a very, very brief introduction where I need your help. So tell us a little bit about your role at the moment within Heidrick.
As you said, I lead our CEO and board practice for Heidrick. So I work with chief executives and chairs really on all their people and talent issues. So hiring, effectiveness, onboarding, that kind of thing.
And how long have you been working in that arena?
Well, I've been at Heidrick for 6 years. Before that, I had a long long career at McKinsey, and I was at Google for a while. So I would say I've been working with leaders for 20, 30 years now.
You've been at some big I will not be discussing. We both seen lots of changes over the years, haven't we? Look, you've worked with some iconic brands, from the strategy house to the well-known Google itself. Just tell me, what are some of the things that you've seen in your journey that you think are important to leaders or to your own leadership as well?
That's a good question. I guess, as we see a little bit in this research that we're going to come on to, what's on my mind is there's so many things going on always. As you mentioned, the different brands and clients and companies that we've both worked with over the years, there's always been a hell of a lot going on, whether it's 9/11 or economic crashes or internet, boom and bust. As a leader, I guess you always have to sit in the middle of that and figure out what matters, what's important, go after it, and try and bring your team and your organization with you. So some of that is, I think, evergreen, even though the context is always shifting.
I think the reality is as well is that it's happening more and more frequently for us, isn't it?
If
you think about how many of these big global incidents or occurrences have happened just in our lifetime, they seem to be speeding up, don't they?
They do. Now, we did do some other research last year, and I was lucky enough to interview lots of global leaders. And I remember speaking to Colin Hunt, who's the chief executive of AIB, who talked about incessant or recurrent black swans, I think was his phrase.
Okay.
You used to have a black swan once every 15 years or something in financial services. And he said today it's sort of every day.
Wow.
So the environment is constantly changing, yes.
There's a great debate, isn't there, that was the pandemic a black swan?
Yes.
Because some people instinctively say, yes, it was, and other people say,
no, it's not.
No, yeah, it exactly. wasn't. So what is a black swan nowadays and what isn't a black swan is probably it's an episode in itself. We'll have to have you back to discuss that. Tell us a little bit about the work that Heidrick is doing from a research point of view, because that was one of the things that attracted me to come to the organisation. But just tell us about that.
Absolutely. I think we have a strong backbone in data and understanding what's going on. And we like to bring that to our clients, as you know, through our frameworks and the way we do all of our assessment and all that good stuff. In my work with boards and with chief executives, I often say it's art and science. So we very much want to make sure we have the right conversations It's the conversation that makes change happen. It's never the data itself, but right. the data can absolutely get you into the place to unblock something, to make someone shift and change their behaviors, which essentially is what, you know, drives leadership in the end. So I guess with that sort of thought process in mind, in our CEO and board practice and the work that I'm doing, we do a lot of research specifically around chief executive success and pathways. We do research around right. the board, how they're composed, how they're formed. And we're doing research currently more on sentiment and confidence, which is what you introduced here. So looking at how leaders are feeling as they go into 2024, yes. what's on their minds, what help do they need, how can we help them essentially as they lead forwards.
I love the research part. Perhaps it appeals to the trial lawyer in me, Alice, because in some ways it gives us the data
yes.
or the evidence to support the propositions that we might have. But then there's also an emotional piece as well, isn't there? When we
yep.
talk about leadership and human beings and culture, we're trying to marry the two in some ways, aren't we?
We are.
And are you finding that CEOs at the moment want data before the emotion, or just depends on the individual?
I think it depends, yeah. It depends on the person and the context and the, you know, what's going on for them.
Yeah.
I think you always need both, really. I think we would always go forwards with both.
Being able to cater for
exactly.
any and
you've
all.
Got to be able to be nimble on that front, I think, with clients.
When we talk about CEO and board,
yep.
it's a privilege for us, isn't it, that we get to work with some of the largest organisations across the world and in some ways peek behind the curtain.
Yes.
But the world of the CEO and the world of the board, is it a world that is not open to many, or not many will reach that height? So is there a slight mysticism around it as well? Let me just start with that. Because many of us will hear about CEOs
yeah.
and boards, but we'll never be in that position.
Yes.
Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that probably
just
is.
Just through sheer numbers.
I think the phrase is, you know, it's sort of used a lot, CEO and board, or obviously it is in my world, but you're right. Of course, just by definition, there's a logic that the fewer of us will get there. I mean, leadership, as you talk about, and this whole conversation is about leading, and everybody leads in some shape or form. So I think the work we do and the insights we bring, I think, are useful for everyone.
I agree.
But having said that, yeah, it's a huge privilege. And I think we're amazingly lucky every day when we work with, you know, such great clients or such great people trying
yeah.
to deal with these big issues, and trying to help them do that is great.
I think we're going to talk about probably multiple pieces of research, but
yep.
we're going to zone in on
yes.
the CEO and board confidence monitor,
yes.
a worried start to 2024, which
yep.
I know you were part and parcel of. Let's just talk about how high profile things are, because if you are a CEO and you are a board member, you're right in the crosshairs, aren't you?
Yes.
And do you find that is something that is at the top of their minds in relation to not getting things wrong as opposed to not getting things right? I don't know, what are you sensing from them in 2024?
Yes, so absolutely. The context of being a CEO,
yep.
And particularly in our world where we're dealing with big multi-billion global
yeah.
institutions, not everyone, you know, not everyone leading and not everyone will get those roles. So, yes, those people, I think, are finding it harder and harder. It's a more demanding role. And in that seat, I think we would say, clients would say, more is expected of them. You know, there's more uncertainty,
yes.
more is at stake, and more people want access to them. So that's really speaking to social media, to, you know, cross communities, stakeholders. It's not just delivering the financial results, which is also increasingly hard
yeah.
to do and has to be done, but also the fact that you are demanding of chief executives to have a perspective often on things like inclusion, energy transition, climate, impact on many, many different things.
We're going to come on to that.
Essentially available sort of 24/7. To do that. So yes, it's increasingly hard.
Well, I think we'll explore that subject of actually, is it just too hard to lead
yes.
for anyone at the moment? And we'll come on to that. Help me this, why this piece of, why was this the focus for Heidrick?
This is a little bit different from ones we've done before,
right.
because it's the first one we've done. We're going to be tracking it quarterly through the year.
Right.
So this is the very first one at the beginning of 2024. So we wanted to dig a bit deeper. Rather than looking at just what's happening, we wanted to really understand how leaders are thinking and feeling and what's on their minds and how much they're worried about various different issues that might be, you know, flowing around
yep.
the world, in order for us to help advise them, as you said, to help work with them, to help answer their questions effectively. So that was what we did.
And how widespread was kind of the process?
So we surveyed, this is a quantitative survey that you have in front of you that went to, I think we had 3,500, I think, respondents sitting in chief executive and board director seats globally of
That's
substantive major organizations. Yes.
Wow. Okay. So this is pretty comprehensive in relation to the results that we've got. And I'll give the headline and then we can dig a little deeper into it. So really the headline points was low confidence in an organization's ability to meet their 2024 goals.
Correct.
And low confidence in the longer term succession and leadership planning.
Correct.
Apart from that, everything's fine.
Everything's fine, yeah. No panic.
Let's look at that, shall we? Low confidence in an organization's ability to meet 2024 goals.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
So maybe if I take a step back, there was we asked them what they were worried about. So,
yes.
So we found there's a huge number of things on their list, of course. And many of those sort of felt out of their control, which was sort of another interesting thing as a leader. Yeah. And then where you are with the piece that you're picking up, we found low confidence in an organization to deliver against the strategy. And I think when you dig into that, and we've also held numbers of roundtables and discussions on the data.
Yes.
I think the sentiment seems to be that strategy is difficult and needs to be changed and amended because there's so much happening. So the question is about the ability to deliver against the strategy. So I think we felt that's more about the fact that plans and strategies need to change than lacking confidence in the organization, because there's another piece of data in there about confidence in the executive team, which is pretty high. I think it's 60% feeling confident or totally confident that the executive team is able to deliver what's needed.
Oh, that's
so interesting. There's a sort of dichotomy that the strategy might be difficult to deliver against, but the team...
We've got the right people.
Yeah, we've got the right people. So they will lead forward and they will figure out the path.
It reminds me a little bit, because I know Mike Tyson at 57 is set to fight again. Didn't he have that wonderful phrase that everyone's got a strategy until they get punched in the face? So maybe that's the element here, that you can create the best strategy, but actually it doesn't last very long in the ever-changing world. Is that at the heart of some of this, do you think?
It is. Well, then in my personal experience, I do a lot of work on board effectiveness.
Yes.
And we do board observations and we talk to chairs and we think about the calendar. Many, many companies are still doing an annual strategy day, but they're also doing a revisit, a refresh, much more dynamic scenario-based strategic planning, because the one day we've written it, got McKinsey in or whatever, put it, I can say that because I was there,
of course,
put it on the shelf, doesn't really work anymore. So I think that would feel to me to be right. It's not to say, companies can't kind of, have a plan, go forward, tweak it, but just a slightly different framing of the question. I think.
How long have you noticed that companies now are saying, yes, of course, we need a plan, but actually we're going to keep going back to it and iterating on it because it just doesn't last the test of time?
Yeah, well, I think maybe organizations have been doing a lot of that anyway for a while. I think perhaps the shift I'm personally seeing is more in the board processes, board timeline, the fact that boards are having to think differently about where they look at it, how they hold the chief exec to account, how they input into it and make sure it's on track, because that's harder to do if you're doing dynamic strategy for a board.
Sure. And are you finding that a board's role for the CEO has changed as well over time?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think there are probably differing views in different countries and sectors and organizations on that. But my view would be the board is having to shift its role a bit, to respond to the things that we're talking about.
Right.
So to that, to the same kind of thought process, you need different skills potentially in the boardroom today. You need to be thoughtful to be able to ask questions or challenge on topics like you won't be deep in probably, like AI, cyber, energy transition, all the ESG topics, as well as strategy, risk, audit, all the good stuff that you've always had to do.
Yes.
And all the ability to deal with all these black swan crises that we've been talking about. So that does require a slightly different tone, I think, in the board.
See, when you describe it like that, one of the thoughts that I've heard, and I think I'm a subscriber to, is that no single person can ever, he or she, have the answers to those enormous topics.
No.
Is that a fair comment?
Yes.
And in fact, probably no board collectively is really going to have all of the answers to these topics. So what's the view then that actually it's just become too hard to lead? In a world that's gone mad, in all of these topics that are circulating the leadership of big companies, and in areas where people are very nervous or worried to trample, for simply they don't know the answers and they're no expert, but they've still got to have a point of view on it.
Yeah. So I'd probably go back to what we were talking about earlier. So I'm not sure if I would say the world has gone mad.
That's me saying
it. Yeah, I know. That sounds headline grabbing.
I know.
But the world maybe has gone mad, but no.
Just a little bit.
So if we're trying to counsel and advise our clients, and if we're trying to kind of take a view of what's happening, the world is always changing and there's change going on today, of course. So, you know, you're arguing that the pace of change has increased sort of so hard, so much that it's impossible to lead. I suppose if you look at that thought as a leader, that's hard to kind of stomach, isn't it? So I guess what I would say is you can't possibly know everything and never, you never could. That's always been true. So as a leader or as a board member, you have to be able to be experienced enough to ask questions, to challenge, to be curious, to try and find the path through. And that has always been the case. So I would say leadership is the same, but it's hard. You just have to be a bit more
you're right. Because if it's too hard to lead, I've almost put myself out of a job, haven't
I? Exactly.
But you're right.
You can't say that.
But there's an element, isn't there, that the landscape has dramatically shifted. It can feel to many that it's very, very difficult to operate in that environment. But I'm also sensing that there's a lot now which is coming back to the ability of the human.
Yes.
And a lot of what I talk about is the human-centered leadership approach. So perhaps a downgrading of the technical competence that people have and the upgrading to the human connection piece. Any thoughts on that in the work you're doing as well?
Yeah, lots.
Yeah.
So I, as you said, I have a privilege of speaking to a lot of board members and also hearing about lots of interesting thoughts and experiences and research. And I think in the boardroom, there is definitely a view and research that supports the view that it's people's capability as a leader, as a human, as you, in your language, that's going to win the day in the boardroom. It's not going to be technical experience on its own.
Right.
You obviously do need, and I would never say you don't, need...
No, people need have worked very hard for
you
that.
Yeah, you need to have run a P&L, you need to run a business, or not need to. That helps to have had that view when you join a board.
Yes.
However, that alone will not make you an effective board member. It's your ability to spot trends, to spot risks, to ask that, you know, that additional question about why not, you know, are you sure? Those are the things that unlock where there's a problem in an organization and where there needs to be further attention. And that's in our Heidrick language, that's about agility, resilience, learning, adaptability, presence, curiosity. That's what we work when we try and hire people and ensure boards are working well together and effective. That's what we're looking at as the real secret sauce.
And I'm glad you've mentioned some of those components, because they're at the heart of this quest, really, that this show is on, about human-centered leadership.
Yeah.
And are you guiding and advising people now who aspire to be board members that this is now something that's incredibly important for them to dial into?
Yeah.
And what's the reaction that you're getting from people? They know, or they're surprised because they've traded off being best in class for 25 years?
Maybe. Yes.
I don't know.
Well, we work, as you know, we work with aspiring board members. I do a lot of work personally with female or diverse executives who would like to get onto boards because we'd like to overinvest in that pipeline. Some of those people are perhaps less senior. We're working lower down the organization. And then at the top end, we're working with all leaders who would like to be in the boardroom.
Yes.
The message to all is broadly the same. You know, you have to have a space to fill in a board, if you like. You have to have some value and a story to tell about why you should be on a board as an individual.
Yes.
So that speaks to some of the P&L functional context. So you've seen a growth,
the competency,
you've seen M&A,
element.
Yeah, all that we call experience, expertise.
Right.
Absolutely. And then to your point, yes, it's about presence. There's a big shift between executive and non-executive that we do help leaders with. Many of the people that we deal with day to day have very clearly understood this and very fluent in both, but not all. And the exec to non-exec is a bit of a shift from telling to suggesting and influencing. And
right, that people connection. I've seen that perhaps become more and more important, Alice, post-pandemic, because I think we went through a period, and I asked leaders, how was the pandemic for you? And I normally get, it was fabulous, ambivalent, and it was a disaster.
Yeah.
So it's across the scale. But I say that it's perhaps highlighted that it's never been as important for leaders to connect, stay connected and reconnected with people. Is that a fair comment? Do you think now in a post-pandemic environment, are you seeing that?
Yes. Again, I always have in my head that leadership has always been ever thus.
Yes.
So it was always important to connect and reconnect with your people and your teams. As I say, forever. COVID was a pretty seismic event, though. And I think with so many different expectations, generations, experiences in the workforce, that yes, it's ever more important. I think COVID did bring that into harsh relief.
I was at an event last night, and a lot of the discussion was around AI, which is everywhere. But they were actually saying that the world is incredibly polarized, and becoming even more polarized. And we've got now the incoming challenge of just deep fakes, where we can't really believe anything we hear and anything we see and anything we read. How does the top of the house, how does a CEO, how does a board deal with an incredible amount of data and information, plus acknowledging that much of that may just be false?
Yes.
And old mischievous.
Yeah.
How on earth do you work in that environment? Yeah. Have they shared any thoughts on that?
That's a great question. There's a
maybe that's another there. That's another paper.
Yeah, I think that's moving fast. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we know or they know. But so AI in the boardroom, most boards know they need to know more, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So are seeking more, and most boards are comprised of people who are, I think, average age of 57.
Right.
Typically come through a chief exec or CFO. Roots, so are not typically digital natives,
right,
to put it mildly.
That's an age.
Yes. Do you know if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does.
So you're not going to find those skills in the boardroom, and you may not find them in the C-suite either. I mean, executives are catching up faster than boards, probably. So therefore, you may need committees, you may need external speakers, consultants. We do hear more and more boards doing simulations or having a day where they spend time in the topic so they can really understand. I don't think many boards fully understand some of the implications of what you've just said in terms of their data.
I don't think the experts do.
No.
I listened to three last night who said, we're going to have to watch with interest.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of that going on currently.
And then that comes back to the piece, doesn't it, that CEOs and boards just will not have a definitive answer to some of the themes that they must grapple with.
But I think boards... again, that's always been the case. So boards are there to sort of hold the chief executive to account and support he or she in her work with the organization on strategy and risk and delivering the results and so forth. And in that role, they were never, ever going to be experts in everything that the business is doing. But they have to know enough to be able to smell if it's right or wrong. Somehow.
Well, there's an element there of just continuous learning, isn't there? That's for everybody.
You have to know
enough. And that's from top to bottom of an organization. So CEO's most significant issues, I think the highest number here is economic uncertainty and volatility.
Yes.
What were they saying in relation to that then, as regards just economic viability and sometimes of enormous organizations that we sometimes take for granted?
Yeah. I think we were amazed by the long list of things they were worried about, and as you say, the top of it are some pretty meaty issues. So economic volatility, geopolitical uncertainty, all those big
workforce attraction and retention. These are big themes,
big themes. Yes,
I mean those are the. So I'll just highlight the first four: economic uncertainty and volatility, geopolitical uncertainty and volatility, workforce attraction and retention, and shifts in market dynamics.
Yes.
I mean, that's just four of a long list.
Yeah, it is.
And those are probably four that keep people up at night anyway.
Yeah.
So what is going on? Help us with this then, because there was lack of confidence in the organization to achieve objectives, but actually confidence in the leadership team.
Yeah.
So just help me understand that a little bit more. Where's that discrepancy or all that difference coming in?
Which difference?
So in relation to there's almost confidence in the people, but not confidence in the organization. But the organization is led by the people.
Well, the organization question, I think, is about strategy. That's the piece that we talked about before, I think. So that's the lacking, less confidence in the plan.
Gotcha.
And that's how I read it, and that's how I feel working with clients. And as you say, the list is a bit of a list of things that one is worried about anyway.
Yeah.
So to some degree, that is what it is. I think what will be interesting is to see shifts and trend data, if some things kind of go up and go down. I think the other thing we thought was interesting was the chief executive and the board were very aligned in things that they were worried about.
Yes.
I thought there might be a bit more of a difference. The board might have different concerns, but they seem to be quite lined up, which felt good.
Well, that's encouraging.
Yeah, very.
In some ways, isn't it?
So if the top of the house are concerned about the big issues, that's good. That's what you'd expect.
They're focused on the right areas.
Yeah.
And it's work in progress.
I think the way you were heading with your questions, you know, rightly, is when you dig into strategy, organization, team, and there are some questions there about succession planning.
Yes.
Board effectiveness, about talent. Some of those we felt, but again, trend data will be interesting because these are absolute sort of numbers. We felt there's quite high low scores. If you mean the low scores were pretty present, so there seemed to be a bit of a lack of confidence in the organization's ability to have the right people, to succession plan, to be effective, to deliver against some of those things. If you get into the heart of it,
I want to pick up on one because it has been a theme that keeps coming up. I've had people coming into the studio talk about it, and clients are talking about it all the time. And that's an organization's ability to attract and retain talent.
Yes.
We're about to have five generations working within single organizations. Raquel Ficardi has been here at Farwise and been spoken about it. What were some of the themes or insights or takeaways in relation to this absolute importance to have the right people coming through the business?
Yeah.
But the pandemic changed the ways of working. And how does someone make themselves magnetic, sticky, attractive, and a place that people want to be at?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that's an episode in itself as well. So forgive me.
But just another big question.
This really highlights.
Yeah, I know.
We could almost do an episode on each of these subjects, couldn't
exactly.
we?
Exactly.
It looks like you'll be coming back a lot. But what are any thoughts or insights off the back of this talent piece?
Yeah. Well, maybe just to sort of comment on some of the first part of your question, the five generations in the workforce
and
COVID and so on. I mean, the way, as you say, we do lots of research, and the way that clients tell us to deal with some of these issues is to have diverse voices, which is perhaps stating the obvious. But if you're going to solve for energy transition, attracting and retaining all generations, some of those big issues that you've read out, you need to have diverse views and different views.
Yes.
Just people who've done different things. They can speak from different vantage points, whether that's geographies or gender or whatever it might be. So that, I think, we see absolutely clearly in research and working with clients. And in our work, we see boards trying to hire, or we see some boards, for example, hiring apprentices to the boards. We see shadow boards. We see advisory boards.
Yeah.
I think Gucci has one. I think Save the Children had one of children.
Yeah.
I heard about another one the other day that I can't remember, but... we're seeing a lot of those anyway. Okay. So how do we get the different voices, into the top when they're not structurally there, which I think is kind of an interesting
thing. Well, I love this idea of shadow boards. Just if anyone hasn't heard of this before, it's the younger generation mirroring the makeup of the board.
Exactly.
And discussing and decision-making the same themes that the board are looking at.
So they get the same set of papers at the same time, and they meet together, and then they give their thoughts to the chair on the board paper. So they talk about what would be their questions, what would be their recommendation. They make the decisions, and they go through the whole thing, and they give that to the chair and the chief executive, and that's their perspective. So that's the way to access younger people.
Yeah.
Oh, Client Earth has one of under 35s.
Right.
One of our colleagues in Business 4.0 sits on the board.
Oh, really?
The shadow board. I forget the actual name they give it, but of the younger generations, I think it's under 35s they have on that particular one.
Yeah.
To talk about their decisions and how that group of people would feel.
That's such
a powerful
mechanism,
isn't it?
I know, I love that. As we're talking about that, let's talk a little bit about the important role that culture has.
Yes.
Because I think out of the research, 83% of companies are working on culture.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the role that culture has played in the insight and findings.
Yes. I managed not to answer your question before, didn't I? So how do you make it come?
I think I actually lumped. It's my fault. And as the trial lawyer, you knew better. I think I lumped many things together in one as I got excited about it.
Yeah, well, there's so many different places to sort of go.
Well, I think we need to unpick some of this. So genuinely, I think we'll come back and we'll actually get some feedback on the episode and say, hang on, could we go a little deeper on X and Y? And we'll do that.
Yeah.
We'll follow up on that. But tell us a little bit about that culture, because obviously we're passionate about that. We do a lot of work in relation to the culture of business.
We do.
We've done research that say that culture and leadership are at the heart of accelerating businesses, both top line and bottom line. Tell me how culture played out for you, though, in this piece of work.
So culture, yes. I mean, going answering various bits of your questions, you know, trying to attract and retain all people, definitely culture is, you know, at the heart of that. I think culture is driven in part by your direct manager. I often think leaders, you know, I know that that data exists.
Yes.
So the person that you're looking at every day in terms of your work.
That's your culture.
That is your culture. That's your culture sort of writ large. But on a kind of organizational level, as you say, we work with many, many clients to help them think this through.
Yeah.
What's it like to work in this organization? What matters to us? How do we make that real? And how are the actions of every leader every day really bringing that to life to help this be a great place to work? And that shines through. And I think if you're going to join a company in the recruitment processes, in the branding, in the, you know, the whole experience of an organization, that should be clear and consistent and congruent.
I love the fact that you've mentioned that point, because I think that's so important, because for large organizations, sometimes it's easy for leaders, and I'm oversimplifying again, to actually say, well, culture is this thing or it's somebody else's responsibility. But I think you've just nailed it, because one of my guests described leadership to me and said it's your promise of a lived experience for those around you. So quite that's right, nice. If you're my leader, my culture, my experience is actually set by you, regardless of how big the organization is. So there's a real piece of accountability here for anyone within an organization, not just the senior, to understand that how you show up creates a lived experience for those around you.
Exactly.
So this is really, when we talk about leadership and culture, we're not just talking about the CEO and the board, are we anymore?
No.
We're really talking about every single level and every single component.
Every day.
Component of it. We talk a lot, don't we, about, and a lot of people will have aspirations of the route to the top.
Yes.
What does that mean? The route to the top. Now, that's not for everyone as well. But, you know, everyone wants to progress and everyone wants to add value and everyone wants to learn and grow and all of those things. Yeah. But we're doing some work, aren't we, about the route to the top. Tell us a little bit about that.
We obviously look at that a lot. So we have a fair amount of strands of research and obviously talking to our clients every day about it. Our report, The Route to the Top, we launched, I think, a week or two ago.
Yes.
Which looks at who is at the top of the organizations that are leading our world forward, what type of people, how do they get there, and what are the behaviors and capabilities that those people are bringing forward, and what does that look like each year? So I think our current view is, you'll probably know some of this already, but diversity, particularly in the UK, if I take a UK lens, it is improving, and we've got good regulatory pressure on that, and just launched the Parker Review this week in London as well. So gender is going well, and I think in times of change, we have found that organisations are relying on a kind of tried and tested formula, if you like, of CEOs, ex-CEOs, CFOs for board seats.
So they should have done it.
Yeah. And if you're taking a CEO role, you've done it before.
Right.
You're 57 years old plus.
It narrows the pool, doesn't it, really, that approach? I suppose they may think there's some safety in it, but it also narrows.
Yeah. And to our previous conversation, if you're going after the same type of person all the time, that doesn't necessarily breed a diverse organization.
Do you get the same type of result? Yes. I don't know. Listen, you've been a leader yourself, Alice, for many years, and you have a leadership role within Heidrick.
Yeah.
So what impact does this all have on you, on how you think about your leadership and your role as a role model within the organization?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I've thought about that. I know
that's another one for an episode, isn't it?
Yeah, I know it impacts the conversations I'm having every day with clients and with teams, because I'm thoughtful about all the different things that are going on and how leaders are showing up to sort of deal with those.
Yeah.
I think at the heart of my personal leadership kind of philosophy is you can only control what you can control.
Yeah, so true.
So this data, you know, we've talked to clients about it. We don't want to be going out saying you've got to worry about the economy and potential war and 54 elections this year in the world. You know, that's all true and fake news. It's true. It's going to happen to some degree. You know, what's my role and what can I do in my role to help? You know,
like your sphere of influence again, isn't it? Well, it comes back to that. Excuse me. How are you going to show up? What is the lived experience that you're going to create with the people that come into contact with you, and not just your direct reports?
Exactly.
So I think, hopefully people listening or watching this will think, actually, focus on what you can fix.
Yes.
Or focus on the sphere of influence that you have.
Yeah.
because that almost like a stone in a pond has a ripple impact,
exactly.
Isn't it? And people see, and it's the role, yeah, of the role model. So
trying to create good, I mean, at the very fundamental level, trying to create really good team environment in our work, where people feel like they're having a good time, they're learning, they're making an impact,
yeah,
it's good quality work, and they're learning and doing something good and different each day. And if we can do that, and we're working, you know, at the top on these big things, then I feel good things will come.
It's a real privilege, isn't it, to be working at the top of the house
with
organisations which are powerful. And I just want to ask a couple of final questions. One,
okay,
of them is this. I hear the term force for good a lot now.
Yes.
So that, how are these big organisations a force for good above and beyond a product or service that they offer? Are you hearing anything in relation to how they are role players in societal good, global good? Are you hearing that in conversations that you have?
Yes. So I think at the beginning of this research, the premise, I guess, is that as a CEO, say, or as a board member, this piece about there's more that's expected, there's more that's at stake, there's,
yes,
more access required, there's just more, the sort of stakes have gone up. So then I think there's a debate that is going on, definitely, in terms of leading organisations, of what's the purpose of an organisation in the world, in society. And if,
yes,
you think about particularly, for example, climate or, you know, many other issues, but if you take energy transition, it's very difficult for one company to achieve that. However, everyone needs to do something differently to achieve it. Consumers won't demand and won't pay for everything that needs to happen in the timeline that it needs to happen. And government are kind of not necessarily keen to over-regulate too fast for all the political reasons. So then you're in a,
yeah,
you're in a bit of a, you know, a bit of an interesting situation. So what is the role of an organization when it's the entity that's making things that might, you know, might not be helpful for energy transition, and how fast should they move, and what should they do about that?
Again, it's having that point of view, I suppose, isn't it? Or even having a slightly purpose-driven direction, because that's so important to not only the talent that you attract and bring in, but also,
exactly,
your customers and your clients and your stakeholders.
Well, it's expected from talent these days,
I think,
much more.
Well, and that's the expectation, as you say, on CEOs and boards,
yes,
to have a point of view.
Definitely.
In this tricky world. Let me try a final question, and it's, what's the best piece of leadership advice that you've ever given or received? What floats to the top of your mind? Given or received?
Yeah, I think, be yourself is one. And be at peace was another one I was given in previous incarnations. So leadership is about choices. You have one life, you know, you have one place to spend it. And I think particularly as if you think about a whole person, not just a work leader, there's obviously family and other commitments outside work. So,
yeah,
you know, make your choices. Nothing's forever, and be at peace with your choices.
I really like that. And that really taps into the human-centered leadership piece. Listen, I know we've only scratched the surface. So my question, and this is the final question, is how can people get in touch with you and perhaps get hold of some of the research that we've just touched upon?
Through our website, through LinkedIn, podcast, perhaps.
What I do is I'll put all the links in the show notes so that people have got that, and then we can tie them into this piece of research, CEO and Board Confidence Monitor, A Worried Start to 2024. Also, The Route to the Top.
Yes.
We can add that, and then any other pieces of research. Are we going to follow up on this one as well?
We see are.
If there's
the next
step change.
Yeah, I think it's out in the out to research right now. Should be out in, I was going to say spring. We're nearly spring, aren't we? May?
We are. I'd lose track of
where
we are. Out soon. There we go.
Yes.
That's lines like out soon and available in all good bookstores.
We'll
have to have you back then, and we'll look
at
maybe the...
where we're headed.
Yeah, where we're headed, and whether there's been any significant changes.
Alice,
thank you very much. I know it's a whistle-stop tour, but you're an absolute star. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it.
Good
thank
to
you.
See you.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.